Morning. We are not going to begin with the local option sales taxes in order to accommodate some guests here this morning. We're going to begin with Senate File 371, Senator DeCryf. He was pushed back from another day, and thank you, Senator DeCryf, for your flexibility here. He is going to talk about eliminating the sales and use tax for political subdivision purchases. It's a major reform that he's introducing. I've carried it myself in the past. It's definitely one worth hearing, and I appreciate his advocacy on the issue. He's got some folks here to testify in support. Senator DeCryf, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Ortman, or Madam Chair, and the committee. I am here to introduce a bill, Senate File 371. What this bill essentially does is it eliminates the sales tax to cities, counties, and townships. These forms of government pay sales tax to the state. And what the state essentially has done in the past is they take this money up into the capital. We use it. We hire people with it. You know, there's shrinkage with this money. And then later in the year, if and when they decide to, they send it back in the form of part of it, at least, in the form of local government aid and county aid. And what I believe we need to do is I believe that we need to eliminate the sales tax where one form of government has to pay sales tax to another. I believe it's inefficient, and it's the difference between a larger way of thinking in government and a smaller way of thinking. This does, and I'll just bring this up right away, there is a fiscal note to this. And, you know, based on the way the state scores these things, the fiscal note over the biennium is approximately $225 million. Now, of that amount, I just want to point out cities pay about 62% of that. Counties pay about 37% and townships about 1%. So the cities are the organizations or the local governments that are going to benefit the most by this. I would just like to point out a couple of cities that are in my district. There's a small town of Lonsdale, a town of 3,064 people that pays $10,636 in sales tax in 2010. The little town of Cleveland, a town of 673 people, paid $11,550. The town of Lee Center did a larger project last year. And in this larger project that had to do with some street repair, some sewer and water, they paid $157,000 in sales tax. And I think that's something that we should leave in the local governments. I'd like to just point out that I live in Le Sueur County, and my Le Sueur County chair, John Grimm, wrote a letter of support. And he also pointed out that Le Sueur County paid $273,000 in sales tax this past year. What I'd like to do is I would like to introduce one of my testifiers, Jen O'Rourke with the League of Minnesota Cities.
Thank you, Ms. O'Rourke. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jennifer O'Rourke. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. And for those of you who don't know, we're the statewide association representing all 853 some cities here at the state capitol. In short, we've had a longstanding position in support of what Senator DeCryf has brought forward here, giving local governments a sales tax exemption. The way he's laid out the bill, we support what's going on here, and hope that you take this into consideration as you move forward with your decisions over the next several weeks. I know the mayor of Northfield is here to explain a little bit more about their particular situation. I would point out for the committee, and a lot of you know this, because we have had support from a lot of you on this concept over the years, and I thank you for that. Senate File 142 is a sales tax fact sheet that I think the Department of Revenue has done a nice job laying out the facts on this, spelling out what some of the carve-outs and exemptions are. A lot of them are in the area of public safety and such. I would point out, I believe it's transportation and gravel bridge sort of items that the townships enjoy an exception on, and that's why their percentage is like 1% versus the cities having 63 67 and the counties having 30-ish. With that, I'd turn it over to the mayor, if that's all right.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to introduce Mary Rossing, the mayor of Northfield.
Mayor, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Senators. I appreciate the opportunity to tell you a little bit about Northfield's story regarding this. Northfield is a town of 20,000 in rural Minnesota. One-fourth of our population is made up of college students, because, and that makes for a very vibrant community. We have two world-class colleges, St. Olaf and Carleton, add to the reputation of the state as a whole as a mecca for education. But they don't pay property tax to the city, but we need to provide all of those essential services: police, fire, street improvements, infrastructure, street lights, sewer, water, etc. In fact, fully 40% of our property in the city of Northfield is tax exempt. Schools, churches, cultural institutions, all the things that make Northfield a wonderful place to call home. We've been the recipient of LGA, and we have depended on this money to help us to provide these essential services to our citizens. But in 2010, we had to account for a loss of $900,000 in LGA. We're accounting for additional loss of $500,000 of our own choosing this year. We expect to lose over the next few years another $2 million. And this is out of our general fund, which is just under $10 million, or was when we started this free fall. We've substantially cut our city staff. We've negotiated favorable terms with our unions. Thankfully, we've required furloughs. We've negotiated early retirements. We've cut back on infrastructure improvements each year and road projects. We have cut hours and services at our library. We've reduced the support of community events and the support that we give our newcomer and Latino populations. And we're just getting started. Over the next year, 3 years, we are taking the responsibility of weaning ourselves off of LGA, thereby eliminating that insecurity from our budget. We believe this is a responsible, prudent, and sustainable approach. It will hurt, but we take it very seriously. And we really understand that it's necessary because the state needs to balance its own budget. We get that in Northfield, and we respect very much the tough decisions that you'll need to make on behalf of all the citizens of the state of Minnesota. However, faced with this new reality, cities need all the tools and resources available to do our work. As I mentioned, Northfield is home to two colleges, highly regarded K-12 schools, numerous churches, cultural institutions. None of those pays property tax or sales tax. Yet the city of Northfield, our government, pays $200,000 a year in sales tax to the state for the purchase of goods that we use. $200,000, that's three cops. We're in the process of planning a modest new public safety facility that will house fire, police, rural fire, and ambulance services for our community. We're estimating that the project budget will include at least $100,000 in state sales tax. In my opinion, that money could be more efficiently spent locally on essential equipment for our fire departments so that they can provide protection for our citizens at home. I urge you, on behalf of Northfielders, on behalf of mayors throughout the state, to give this bill serious consideration. And I thank Senator DeCrey for bringing this forward, a bill that I believe will give some relief, at least, to Minnesota cities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Mayor. Are there questions or comments from the committee?
We Madam also Chair, have could I just DeCrey. Point out that I do have an amendment to this, and I don't know if anybody wants to introduce this amendment.
Of course, Senator DeCrey. Can you just give us the number, and we'll make sure it gets passed out? What is the number on it?
It's A1.
A1 amendment. Senator DeCrey, while it's passed out, do you want to explain what the A1 amendment does, please?
Yes. What it essentially does is it clarifies that there are some certain businesses that are tied with city government that we do not think should be sales tax exempt, such as golf courses, laundromats, municipal liquor stores. There are several things, several businesses like that we just do not think should be sales tax exempt, even if they are tied to the city, because they could compete directly with private businesses. So we want to be careful not to compete with private business with this exemption.
Thank you. And Madam. Senator Kreif, the fiscal note that you have with the $212 million cost factors in this A1 amendment, is that correct?
The one with $225 million. Yes, it does factor in the this amendment.
And the fiscal note is dated March 1, 2011. Are we working off the same fiscal note?
Yes.
There? All right. Thank you.
Madam Chair,
Senator,
I'll move the A1.
Senator Howe moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion on that? It is a courtesy to the author here. All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The A1 is adopted. Thank you, Senator DeKreif. I wanted to point out one of the anomalies in our system, and I think this begins to address it. Members, we heard the bill to exempt radios, the purchase of public safety radios for these cities. They would have to get an exemption from us, otherwise they have to pay the sales tax. If they buy a police car, they have an exemption. But if they buy a computer for that same car, they have to pay the sales tax. There are so many holes and exemptions to our policy already that it makes sense to have a comprehensive approach here. And I appreciate Senator DeKreif and the mayor and the city's focus here on doing an overall comprehensive plan here. It is expensive, but I think it makes a lot of sense in the overall tax code, and I hope members will be supportive. Questions or comments from members of the committee? With nothing further, the chair would lay over for possible inclusion.
Madam Chair, there is one other person that would like to testify.
All right.
He's with the Coalition
Mr.
of Greater
Peterson.
Minnesota Cities.
Correct, Mr. Peterson?
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity. Madam Chair, members, my name is Steve Peterson. I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. We support the idea of the exemption of exempting cities from paying the sales tax on purchases. I think everyone kind of agrees on the policy grounds that the idea of raising a property tax to pay a sales tax seems a little iffy. However, the Coalition does not support the idea of doing this if it means that it is being paid for with a reduction in local government aid. I understand that the Senate file 371 does not state that, but we just want it has been part of the discussion and wanted to go on record that that is our position. If you'd like to ask further questions, I'm more than happy, or if you want to continue moving along, given that the bill does not technically do that, I'm also okay with that too. Just wanted to go on record. Thank you.
Duly noted, Mr. Peterson. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Without further objection, the chair lays over Senate File 371 as amended for possible inclusion. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We are going to move on to Senator Michelle. Senator Michelle has Senate File 1. All right, Senator Michelle, corporate income tax and statewide business property tax. And Senator Michelle, your work will also help to introduce my bill, so I appreciate your work. My bill is Senate File 27, which also phases out the corporate income tax, but in a different time frame. So, Senator Michelle, the floor is yours. I know you have several testifiers here in support as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Members, Senate File 1 is a jobs bill, and this committee has already had multiple meetings and hours talking about our jobs climate, our tax climate, our business climate, and the high cost of doing business in Minnesota. Senate File 1 does three things to send a message to job creators. Please come to Minnesota. Please stay in Minnesota. Expand and create more jobs here in Minnesota. Madam Chair, this bill cuts in half over the course of 5 years the corporate income tax rate, the business income tax rate. So we now have the third highest in the country, and this would cut that rate in half, again phased in over time. The second piece of Senate File 1 focuses on property taxes. There's a statewide business property tax that all employers pay, and this does two things to the business property tax. It takes the automatic inflator off that tax and rolls our rolls the business property tax back to roughly 2009 levels. The combined cost, and we've talked about dynamic scoring, but the combined cost, as to the fiscal note that you have in your packet, is roughly in the $200 million ballpark, $100 million for each of those two provisions. And then, members, I'll just note the last provision, which I believe is Article 2 of Senate File 1, is the environmental permitting, the regulatory relief provisions that have already been passed and signed into law. So there's a section of the bill that has already been enacted, and so I'll once again publicly thank the members for their bipartisan support for those provisions, and Governor Dayton for his executive order and then his signing of that part of Senate File 1. So, Madam Chair, maybe just a few more introductory remarks, and then I think we have testimony based on the two remaining tax provisions, one group on the property tax and one group on the income tax side.
Senator Michelle, I believe we have Ms. Kay Rako from NAIOP and Paul Hewat from Hewat Manufacturing and Patrick Misha from Duke Realty Corporation. If you folks would join us at the table.
Come on up. And so, Madam Chair, if I may, let me make a few more remarks to kind of tee up these folks.
Senator Michelle.
But again, with Senate File 1, we want to loudly declare two things as our priorities. Two things. One, we want to lower the cost of doing business in what is a high-cost state. And that, two, with the regulatory provisions that we already talked about, we want to give quicker and clearer responses to job creators. Members, I think, you know, any rough analysis of the economy right now looks like there's some signs of life, a little bit of life. And so businesses, families, and job creators are on the verge of making some choices. They're going to make some decisions about what to do with their cash. They're going to make some decisions about what to do with their ideas. And we want to give them reasons, strong reasons, to choose Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Come to Minnesota. Stay in Minnesota. So with our corporate income tax being the third highest in the country, we've talked about this, members. There's a sticker shock to that. There's a sticker shock to being the third highest. It's a detriment to business and job creation. With the property tax provision, which I want to get these testifiers to talk about, Madam Chair, you know, whether or not businesses are making any income right now, they're all paying property taxes. Whether or not customers are coming through the door in this kind of a economy right now, they're all paying property taxes, large businesses, small businesses. So this part of Senate File 1 is an attempt to give some relief, again, send a signal to these job providers that we want you here. We want you here in Minnesota. So, Madam Chair, let me start by asking Kay Rako from the NAIOP to introduce her two testifiers. And so we'll start kind of on the property tax provision and then float back to the income tax side.
Thank you, Good Senator morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kay Rako, and I am the Director of Public Policy for NIOP, the Commercial Real Estate Development Association. We represent the developers and owners and manage of commercial and industrial properties, along with the thousands of tenants, businesses that are the tenants in the buildings that we own and manage. And I am here this morning to ask you to consider a few things as you look at Section 1 of this bill, which is the state business property tax. And since its inception in 2002, this tax has increased by 34% through payable 2011. And I want to stress, as Senator Michelle did, that all businesses pay this tax, whether they're big, small, make money, don't make money, whether they lease their building, whether they own their building. It is the one tax that is common to all businesses, and it is a fixed cost. And the other thing in the statistics and war stuff that we have going on here, we decided to rely on the Minnesota Taxpayers Association for the most reliable tax studies and rankings, both regionally and nationally. And for their study, which is for property taxes payable 2009, I want to highlight 3 points. Urban and rural, $25 million commercial properties, and rural, $1 million commercial properties, are all ranked in the top 10 nationally. When you're looking at industrial property, the burdens will be anywhere from 10% below the national average to 25% above the national average. And this depends on the value of the building and the part and the location in the state. And even though commercial properties have experienced significant competitive improvement since 1995, property taxes on a commercial building in Minneapolis are still 12 to 44% above the national average, and a commercial building in Glencoe is 15 to 54% above the national average. And I am going to repeat a comment that was made in the House Tax Committee a few weeks ago by Representative Lencheski, and I'm going to do it because I think she summed it up very well. She said, in the end, the effective rate is what you pay. And I am noticing that the highest effective rate in our property tax system is paid by our business community overwhelmingly. Just look at the numbers. They're paying 2 to 3 times in property taxes of their property value. She goes on to say, in my take, as we hear a lot about helping businesses with jobs, the biggest tax businesses are paying is the property tax. It's the most unfair tax they pay, and we should spend time thinking about that as we go forward in trying to assist businesses in Minnesota with job creation. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Hewitt, who is a job creator and a business property taxpayer in Minnesota.
Thank you. Mr. Hewitt, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee, for allowing me to speak on the property taxes on small businesses. I'm a longtime taxpayer and a first-time testifier. Hewitt Manufacturing was started in 1926 by my grandfather. We're located about 3.5 miles west of here on University Avenue, and we support 38 employees and their families with wages that are above average and benefits. Our product lines include products to help small and mid-sized machine shops get organized, and we sell throughout the United States. We also export to Canada, Mexico, and Asia. We are also a custom fabricator. We make products for all sorts of businesses, medical, computers, agricultural, and we have competition down the street and throughout the Midwest. We also are in government sales. We make a line of products to sell to the government, and we have competition throughout the United States on those products. This is an example of a product that we make for the government. It's used to store small tools to repair aircraft in the field. And when I talk about the field, I'm talking about the out in the battles with the Army and the Navy and the Marines. They store tools. Their aircraft get hit. The tools that are stored in this product help them fix that situation. We recently lost the contract for this item after 15 years. We lost it due to heavy competition and real tight bidding. The loss of this particular product was somewhat due to the higher costs of doing business here. We could compete with anybody in the world in our production. But when we have the fixed costs, such as property taxes, we have to add that into our bids, and it meant partly that we lost this product. It represents 2.5 full-time employees' jobs lost, the loss of this product. In November of 2008, we saw a 45% drop in sales. It was like a light switch. One day the phone was ringing, the next day it went dead. That lasted throughout 2009. To stay in business, we had to cut costs dramatically. We took wage cuts from 5 to 25%, and we had to lay off a couple of our friends. And these people are our friends. When you only have 38 employees, you know everyone by name, you know their families, you know their children. We had to cut some benefits. We had to stop spending. To continue to pay fixed costs like property taxes, we had to cut further than we'd like to have. But it was a choice we had to make, or not choice we had to make. I understand we have to pay taxes one way or another, but anything you can do to reduce our taxes, fees, and regulation burdens can be invested in new equipment and in people so we can be competitive and hire more people. I want to thank the committee for hearing me out. I want to support Senator Michelle's bill, SF1, and thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Hewitt. We wish you well with your business. Mr. Patrick Misha is also here from Duke Realty Corporation. Would you like to address this portion of Senator Michelle's bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Misha, and I manage the Twin Cities operations for Duke Realty Corporation. We are an owner, developer, manager, and builder of office, industrial, medical office, and retail properties across the country. Some of our local projects include the Norman Point office towers in Bloomington and the West End project in St. Louis Park. And I would just like to make a couple of points today in front of the committee. One is more of a mechanical point, and that is that I think it's important that the committee understand that in the commercial real estate industry, property taxes are not paid by the owners of the buildings. They are pass-through items under the leases that govern the relationship between the owner and the tenant. What happens is that the taxes are imposed on the property. The check might be written by the owner, but then they are passed through to each of those tenants as additional rent. So in the end, the tenants who are the job creators and occupiers of our buildings are the ones that are paying those costs. The second point that I'd like to make is, you know, our favorite thing to do as a company is to build buildings. When we build a building, we employ hundreds of people on that site for a period that might be 2 years long. We create value. We take something that maybe was valued at level X and turn it into something valued at Y, which will generate more property taxes for the state and local jurisdictions. But we can't start building buildings again until we have job growth in the state, until our tenants can become healthy and we can start soaking up some of the vacant space that's currently in the market. The office vacancy rate in the Twin Cities is right now around 19%. And generally in the commercial real estate industry, we won't consider starting to build new commercial office buildings until that vacancy rate is about 10% and trending downward. Some research that we review indicate that we won't hit a 14% vacancy rate until perhaps 2015. So we need to create some growth. We need to make our tenants healthy. We need to have an environment where they can thrive and succeed, so that we can put people to work, put people back in those office buildings and warehouses, and start generating income in our economy. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you so much. Senator Michelle, can you identify the statewide business property tax portion of the fiscal note for us, so we know how much this portion of your bill will cost?
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I don't know if I have the fiscal note. I might have an old one in front of me, but it's roughly $100 million, and I'd look to staff to confirm that. Again, the total fiscal cost for both of these provisions is roughly $200 million, and we try to divide it up half and half. So $100 million in this next biennium for a business property tax piece that these folks are testifying to this morning.
And generally speaking, Senator Michelle, do you know what the percentage reduction that is?
Ms. Rocco? Well, we're at $795 right now. I'm no good at math. So we're at $795 and we're going
to $217. These are the two fiscal notes and $100 million.
I'm trying to figure that out.
I have two fiscal notes.
Looks like it's 78.
Madam Chair, we're doing some quick math for you here, but we think we're collecting roughly $795 million
annually,
and that this would bring that $795 figure down to roughly $717. So I couldn't do a quick percentage for you.
No, that helps. That looks like it's about 10% or roughly 10% reduction. All right, that helps. Members, questions regarding this section of the bill? Senator Michelle, if it's all right with you, at this point I would ask anyone here in the audience that would like to testify about this portion of the bill, the proposal to reduce the statewide business property tax, to come forward and address the committee if they'd like.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pogemiller.
So the number is $78 million, Senator Michelle? Senator Michelle? The number is $78 million, not $100 million? Based on the math you just did, that appears to be the number.
Senator Michelle.
I will concur and agree based on the numbers that I've just looked at. We roughly tried to ballpark this at 100, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Michelle. All right, seeing no one here to testify one way or the other on the statewide business property tax portion, I would hope that we could then move on, members, to the corporate tax provisions in Senator Michelle's bill. And we have Tom Hesse from the Chamber of Commerce, Jill Larson from the Minnesota Business Partnership, and Mike Hickey from the National Federation of Independent Businesses. And members, I would point out that Senate File 27, the bill that I've introduced, is also a phase out of the corporate income tax. They phase out on a different schedule, and so there are two different fiscal notes and two different bills. Senator Michelle.
Madam Chair, just to introduce this, and again, this is not a new topic, this particular tax, for this committee, but I want to note a couple things. You do have a handout from a Wall Street Journal piece that talks about what other states are doing. What other states are doing right now with their business taxes, and particularly their corporate taxes, they are racing ahead of us. They are racing ahead of us. I'll highlight a few. Iowa's going to cut their corporate tax rate in half. Arizona's going down to 4.9 from 7%. Florida is phasing out its corporate income tax. Our friends to the north, even Canada, is reducing its business income tax. And, of course, there's been some discussion at the federal level now with President Obama and his debt commission to reduce and reform this corporate income tax as a way of collecting revenue. So the first point, Madam Chair, is that other states are racing ahead of us. The second point I will stress again is that we have the third highest rate in the country. There is a sticker shock to that. And what we want to do with this legislation is put a line through the sticker shock and get people to think about Minnesota again. Madam Chair, I'm not going to use Hutchinson Technology as an example of the business income tax, but I do want to use it as a reminder that job creators have choices. And this week we learned, and I'm looking back at Senator Newman because I know he's in the crowd today. This week we learned that Hutchinson Technology is moving many of its operations to Wisconsin and to Thailand. In a 21st century global economy, job creators have more choices. They are more nimble. They can move more quickly than ever with a click of a mouse. And so we need to get Minnesota back into at least in the ballpark of being competitive on cost and price. So thus the focus on this part of the business income tax. I'll defer to you, Madam Chair, as to which of these three you'd like to go first.
Well, they're all raising their hand. They all want to go first. It's a competition. But I generally choose ladies first. So Ms. Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Jill Larson, here for the Minnesota Business Partnership. Before I speak about the corporate income tax, I just want to go on the record that the partnership also supports the statewide property tax reductions in the bill. We're just trying to not use up too much of the committee's time repeating testimony. So I just want to be on the record that we're supportive of the whole bill. With respect to the corporate tax provisions, we do support the bill, as well as your bill, Senator Ortman, and Senator Chamberlain's bill. There's a lot of discussion about competition, and from our members' perspective, taxes do matter. They are obviously not the only factor that businesses look at when they're making expansion decisions or location decisions or relocation decisions, but they are a very important factor, and frankly, with the way that the world is changing and global competition getting more and more fierce every year, they matter more than ever. The Itasca jobs report that came out last year, that committee is currently chaired by Doug Baker, CEO of Ecolab, who spoke in Senator Michelle's jobs committee on this, is they interviewed site selectors. And site selectors look at human capital and they look at the tax climate. And Minnesota does well in terms of human capital. We all know that. We have a very well-educated workforce. But our cost of doing business is high. Senator Michelle mentioned the high corporate rate. We have high labor costs. And, again, in the words of Doug Baker, when he was interviewed on NPR, he said, you know, it's less about Minnesota kind of falling down and maybe more about that the rest of the country and the rest of the world really catching up and becoming more competitive. Senator Michelle mentioned the other states that are actually moving toward reducing their business taxes as well as other countries. And so it's about competitiveness. In addition, this committee is well aware that the corporate tax is a very regressive tax. It's passed on to consumers in the form of higher prices for goods, and it's passed on to workers in the form of higher wages. Numerous studies have shown that it is one of the worst taxes in terms of economic growth, in terms of impact on wages, and it's also very volatile, as you've seen in the budget forecast over the years. It has highs and lows, and it exacerbates, I think, budget situations. And it's a hidden tax. People pay it, but most people don't know they pay it. With that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer questions, or if you want to wait till the rest of the testifiers are done. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. We don't want to keep Mr. Hesse waiting. He had his hand up, too. Mr. Hesse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And I'd also like to state for the record that we support the statewide property tax portion of the bill. It's the state's most direct lever to pull if you want to reduce business property taxes without any unintended consequences to other types of property. On the corporate income tax, I agree with Ms. Larson, and we'll keep this short. Minnesota does have a high rate, and that does have some consequences. The research shows a reduction in the rate should translate over time into increased investment into the state, and that we think is important, will ultimately lead to job creation. As has been talked about, other states are making more progress than Minnesota on making their corporate income taxes more competitive. And I think as we look over time, Madam Chair, your bill and this bill all send good signals to the business community about the direction the state is headed, and I think that's an important signal to send. So we would certainly support the efforts to make some progress on our corporate income tax. We know you have a huge challenge with the state's budget, and as you're contemplating those changes, again, we think as budgets allow, making some progress on the corporate income tax is an important thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hesse. We also have Mr. Hickey this morning.
Madam.
Good morning.
Batting cleanup here. Madam Chair, Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business, or the state's largest business group in terms of entities with 12,000 small businesses. We want to thank Senator Michelle for coming forward with this bill to address two longstanding problems Minnesota businesses have struggled with. I just wanted to briefly say that we do support the provision on the statewide commercial property tax provision, and that's a longstanding problem. We made some progress back in 2001, but as Kay Rocco pointed out, our rates are still high, and we don't compare well, and a lot of our members do own their own property, and they're all affected by it to some degree, but a lot of our members do own their own property. I wanted to make a couple brief comments about the second part of the bill, trying to deal with another long-term problem, the high rate of the corporate income tax in Minnesota. Most of our members don't pay it, but based on our surveys, our biggest and most successful still do, and the other ones who don't pay it, a lot of them have long-term and successful relationships with large companies that do pay it. And so we're all interconnected in this, and Minnesota's had a very high rate on this for a long time. Senator Michelle's bill is going to bring us from third or fourth highest to ninth lowest. So that is really going to send a signal to people that we are trying to make changes, and we really appreciate that. I just want to leave you with one other thing. I was fortunate enough to attend a meeting of the Small Business Caucus over in the House a little over a year ago. Representative Dietrich and Representative Downey chaired that task force, and they brought in experts on venture capital, and they painted a bleak picture of where Minnesota's at. And in their opinion, we have slipped, and we are not creating the kind of capital to have the type of investment climate we used to have. And their recommendations were try to cut the corporate rate in half, try to do something on capital gains. That is another real problem we have. Wisconsin is significantly lower. They're 12th lowest, and we are 8th highest on capital gains for people in a top rate situation. Enact an angel credit, which we did, and also I think we could add to that with the Small Business Investment Credit, or CAPCO, which I know this committee has supported in the past. But they painted a bleak picture about a lot of things need to be done in Minnesota to try to improve our investment and jobs climate, and I'm really glad I was able to see that. And Senator Michelle's bill does address a lot of that.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. For members, I have a couple of handouts that also support the initiative here. There's the range of state corporate income tax rates that will show us all 50 states. We have a handout from Dr. John Spry that talks about the elasticity and the gains to potential dynamic scoring gains in the economy by cutting the corporate income tax. And then one of the slides from Mr. Beatty, if you remember him, he was the site selector who came in on global competitiveness, who reminded us that the state, according to the CEOs across the state or across the country, gave us a C- for taxation and regulation in the nation. So those handouts are being offered at this point. Senator Bach.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Larson, I guess I probably should ask you this. You represent the state's largest companies, and many of those CEOs are friends of mine. At least I think of them as friends. But, Ms. Larson, there's a bill floating around that would take our statutory rate of 9.8 and just get rid of all the credits, all the deductions that we have that corporations access, and create a new corporate rate of, I believe it's 3.1%, the real net effective rate. Does the partnership have a position on, if I were to offer an amendment here to just cut our rate from 9.8 to 3.1, get rid of all these credits, all these deductions that that mask what the real net effective rate is, does the partnership have a position on just getting rid of all those things, and would they support a 3.1% rate?
Senator Bach. Wait, excuse me, Ms. Larson. Senator Bach, are you referring to Senator Langseth's
yes.
bill? Because he pulled the hearing request. I just want the committee to be aware. He pulled the hearing request because it had internal problems and didn't balance. So yeah. We offered him a hearing. He acknowledged that there were some problems with that bill, and he withdrew it. And I just wanted to make sure everybody knew the status before we went on. Ms. Larson, do you want to address Senator Bach's question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bach, in referencing Chairwoman Ortman's comments, that bill had some reductions. For example, it got rid of the dividend received deduction, for example, which is, I think most people would not even consider that sort of a tax preference. That's just a, you know, complying with federal law. It also, I think, got rid of the ability to deduct taxes that you pay in other states. So some of our members had some real concerns with that bill. That bill would need some tweaking before we would be able to support it. I think if you're going to go down to a rate as low as 3%, ideally, I think most people would agree that the corporate tax is just a bad tax. It's flawed. I know you've even spoken to that in the past, Senator Bach, that it would be better just to get rid of it then, because, and I know we don't have the financial wherewithal to do that, because it is so costly to administer for both the state and for companies. And it would depend on the company what that would do. For some companies that receives, you know, I think that also got rid of the R&D credit. And the legislature last year made the R&D credit refundable. So for those startup companies, not my members, obviously, but for those startup companies that don't really have enough income to have to pay the corporate tax, that refundable R&D credit is a benefit to them because it helps them get their startup company more than just a startup. So I think that we'd have some concerns about getting rid of the R&D credit in general, and I would assume many other organizations would as well.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Ms. Larson, Bob. Then if, how about if we just got rid of some, if we negotiated a bunch of the credits or deductions that corporations get, if we negotiated them away and then lowered the rate by a corresponding amount, so considering our budget circumstances, it becomes revenue neutral. If we just got rid of a bunch of the credits and deductions and we're able to bring the rate down by whatever that amount is, if it's not 3.1, let's say it's 6%, and we get rid of things like the R&D credit and other credits, because we all know in this room the rate's not really 9.8, because there are a lot of credits and deductions that the corporate community has. So, I mean, and that's, because I'm, Madam Chair, I think there is a perception problem. I'm not sure, Senator Michelle, that lowering the rate will create any jobs, but certainly there's a perception that we have a high rate. And I agree with that, and perceptions matter. But one of the problems I have, Senator Michelle, is how, let's use John Menard, for example. Okay, I stopped at Menard's last night, so he's on my mind. And I have to send my little rebate in on my garbage bags when we're done here today. But how if we cut the corporate rate for a company like Menards, how are we assured that they're going to reinvest that money in Minnesota? I think that's my question, Madam Chair. If we, Senator Michel, if we did lower the rate, how are we assured by these companies that aren't domiciled here, John Menard or the Walton family or Wells Fargo, businesses that do a lot of business in this state, how do we find some assurance that by doing that they're going to reinvest this money in this economy and create jobs here? I mean, is there a way to take the corporate tax savings that we create and put it into an account for maybe enhancing the research and development credit, just to make sure that the tax savings actually are reinvested in Minnesota? That's my biggest concern, because I know a large percentage of the corporate tax that's paid, I think if you look at the 07 tax incidents report, it's about 46% of the corporate tax that's paid are paid by companies that aren't domiciled here. And I think if you look at the 09 report, it's about 40% of the corporate income tax that's paid are paid by companies that don't call Minnesota home. And how, if we make those cuts, do we just assure that the money doesn't fall to the bottom line in San Francisco or Bentonville, Arkansas, or in Wisconsin? Because I'm interested in lowering the rate, Senator Michel, but I also want to make sure that tax savings is reinvested in Minnesota's economy so we really do create jobs here. Is there a way, have you thought about some way to maybe capture the tax savings and put it into some real job creation incentives in Minnesota rather than just allow it to go to the corporate spreadsheet in especially outside the state?
Madam Chair.
Senator Michel.
There was a lot there, and I appreciate where Senator Bach is going, and I think in his heart and even in his head he wants to do something here, and I think there's a way to do this. I think there's a way to fit this into our budget. I was just going to note that whether you go with what's in Senate File 1 or something different, we're talking about 0.6% of the state budget. If you wanted to use $200 million that's what we can do for tax relief this year, it's 0.6%. We should be able to prioritize that, Madam Chair. But what I wanted to, without getting too academic, because that would be a mistake for me, but to Senator Bach, we have heard testimony in this committee within the last couple weeks. The Minnesota corporate income tax reduces payrolls. It reduces the size of the Minnesota economy. That is what the St. Thomas professor said. And you have this, but I'll share this with you again. This was Professor Spry, and he also absolutely came to the conclusion that the net long-run effect would be an increase in Minnesota GDP. If we dropped the rate, there would be an increase in the economy. That sounds good to me. Can we guarantee specific job increases? I don't know if there's any state legislature that can do that, Senator Bach. I know where you're coming from. I think I know what you're looking for. To broaden the discussion, we've had talk about, well, if you pass a $1 billion bonding bill, that equals 10,000 jobs. Sometimes we've heard it's 20,000 jobs or 25,000 jobs. I don't think the legislature, I don't think as policymakers, we should be getting into job guarantees, because I don't think we can fulfill them. But we can set the foundation. We can learn from what other states are doing. We can listen to the kind of folks that are at this table today, the hometown team, and try to create a climate that fits with this new economy. And so, you know what, Senator Bach, it might be a little bit of a leap of faith, but I think it can be bipartisan. I think governors of all stripes have all set the goal of getting Minnesota out of the top 10 in taxes. And that's the broad discussion of taxes, income and property and business. But going back to repurpose, they wanted to get out of the top 10 because they realized it was a burden, that it was a barrier to jobs. So I don't think I can give you a job guarantee today, but I do hope we can work on it together.
Madam Chair, one other thought kind of along the same line, Senator Michel. One of the other things that concerns me, and I've got the list here of Minnesota's top 100 paid CEOs. Okay, how are we assured that when we reduce the rate, we don't just increase the CEO's compensation? I'm just looking at, we all know Target Corporation, Greg Steinhoffel. In 2008, his compensation was $2.4 million. In 2009, it was over $8 million in 1 year, from 2.4 to 8. Get on to Richard Kelly at XL Energy. I pay an XL Energy bill down here. In 2008, he made $4.3 million. 2009, he made $7.1 million. George Buckley at 3M has been in the news recently. In 2008, made $5.5 million. 2009, made $6.9 million. Now, I can go down the list of all 100 if you'd like, but how do we assure that if we're going to give up this money in our budget, that it gets reinvested in our economy to create jobs?
It's not our money. Michelle. Madam Chair, it's not our money, Senator Bach. It's not your money. It's not the tax committee's money. The kind of names that you just went through, I wish there were more of them in Minnesota. I wish they were doing more business and creating more jobs. I don't think it serves this legislature to go through that kind of a list in that fashion. We need more private sector jobs. We need a growing, thriving economy, or else everyone in this room is going to come back again and again talking about budget deficits. The one, I'll throw one more academic stat at you. Today, in 2011, we have as many people employed in Minnesota as we did in 1999. So we have a 2011 economy, but we have 1999 job levels. We're trying to build our budget this year based on 1999 job levels. That is a heavy lift. That is a heavy lift for this legislature. That is a heavy lift for this governor. So, Senator Bach, I hope that we do more than just talk about tax increases. I hope we do more than just talk about spending cuts. I hope we can get to talking about growth. And that's what I believe Senate File 1 and the provisions in it can lead to. Growth. We got to get this economy going again. Frankly, I wish we could be bolder. I wish we could do more than what's in the provisions of this bill. But it's a start. It's a message. It's symbolic. And I believe it's important.
Senator Michelle, I would just add one thing, Senator Bach. Dr. Spry's chart, based on the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco Economic Review and a modeling chart, shows that if you reduce the corporate income tax from 9.8% to 4.9%, he predicts growth in the gross domestic product in the state of 2.94%. Now, there are no guarantees, and it may be on a complete range of, 0.1 all the way to 2.94 or even more. There are no guarantees, but I think that's the goal, is economic growth. I can't imagine that there's any legislator that doesn't think that that is in the top of our priorities, is to generate economic growth. And we have the best evidence available that says that if you cut that corporate income tax, we're going to have economic growth.
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy and then Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Michelle, since you brought up 99 to 2011, I would be the first to agree with you that the Ventura and the Pawlenty administrations had us on the wrong direction. With regard to job creation, Mr. Hickey testified that the majority of these small businesses that are the job creators wouldn't be benefited by this corporate tax rate, and I'd agree with that also. But those are just two comments. What I really wanted to say was, I listened to you say that these companies are going to move their businesses around with the click of a mouse. I think that's a real overstatement. I mean, I don't believe that Hutchinson Technology made this decision to move businesses or to close jobs in Hutchinson with the click of a mouse. There was testimony in this committee a number of years ago from Growth and Justice, Wayne Cox, and his proposal was to eliminate business taxes. And I agreed with him. I thought it was a good thing to do. I thought we should look at it. But what his proposal was is to replace it with a higher income tax rate to pay for those educational opportunities and things that businesses count on. So what it looks to me like we have is an opportunity for compromise, because between your and the chair's bill and Governor Dayton bill, it appears to me that there's a lot of common ground that can be found here. And I hope as we move through this session, we're able to find that compromise and get this done so that these testifiers can be pleased with the outcome of this session.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think this has been a really healthy discussion, Senator Michelle. And I really like this talk about how can you guarantee, Senator Bach, that if we do lower the corporate tax rate, we're going to create jobs and they're going to stay here. We need to turn the discussion back to focusing on our strengths in Minnesota. And that's what do we have here in place? When I first was elected in 2002, Governor Pawlenty pulled together the biotechnology task force. And it was really interesting to see the strengths that we have in this state, with whether it's and it's all about biotechnology, whether it's medical devices or it's agriculture or manufacturing. And from then, we need to focus on those technology, those high-tech jobs, and hopefully create something that will be like, you know, the R&D tax credits or something moving forward. But let's focus on our strengths and help them out so they can maintain their businesses here.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. Senator Chamberlain and then Senator Pogamiller.
It's almost rhetorical, but we, I think, would agree that businesses are in business for what? To make money, to make a profit. To do that, they have to, and when they do that, they hire people. So if you increase your costs and you're a business, then you're not going to make as much money. That's guaranteed. So without raising your prices, if you raise your prices, then you lose business. You lose business, then you're out of business. So all these states around us, they're lowering their rates, they're changing how they do business to attract investment. So you're company X, and you're looking for a place to expand. Maybe you're Hutchinson Technologies, and you're looking for a place to expand. But you're looking at Minnesota, and there's people in Minnesota in the legislature who believe, well, that any money that Hutchinson Technology makes is somehow that the state's entitled to that. So you're thinking, Wisconsin is changing, Iowa's changing, why can't I open my new plant and expand in Iowa? Now, that's what they will do. I'll guarantee you, Senator Bach, they'll do it. They have been doing it. Now, Ameriprise Financial, they may not up and move their whole corporate operation tomorrow or next week, but they won't expand here. I've talked to many companies that won't expand here. If they can't make money, if they can't hire people, they will not expand and will continue to spiral. So I will guarantee that they will not expand, and that if we do become more business friendly and believe that it's not our money, they will invest and grow here. They will stay here. They'd be happy to be here, but I've talked to too many. They're gonna take off or they'll expand somewhere else. I've always used the example of what people do when they're properly incented. A lot of people fly. So when they started charging $20 to check baggage, I was amazed one day. I went down to the baggage claim. I was at the back of the plane, so I got down there. Thought there'd be people down there. I walked back and forth for 15 minutes thinking, well, where is the baggage claim? There got to be more people down here. Well, there weren't, because everybody jams their luggage in the overhead because they don't want to pay the $20. So I would contend, Senator Bach, others, it's not our money, and if we don't do something, they will continue to go somewhere else. They're in business to make money. And if they can't make money here because the costs are too high, they're going to go. And I would contend, maybe you could comment, that what about eliminating the corporate tax? And, you know, everybody should pay something. Eliminating the corporate tax and having a net equity tax. You know, fair, easy, simple. But they're paying for what they get. Have you thought about that part of it? I'm done talking.
Thank you, Senator Chamberlain. Senator Pogamiller.
Going back to the business property tax, and I think NIAP did not support it in 2001, if I recall, and I think small businesses did not support it.
No.
You did support it?
We did.
You did. NIAP, I think, voted, was against the statewide.
Senator Pogamiller, we want to make sure the record reflects who's speaking. Senator Pogamiller.
I think NIAP opposed the statewide business property tax, if I recall, in 2001. Do you?
Ms. Rocco?
I know that they had a struggle with the state tax, but I think that was part of what
Okay. We accepted in order to reduce the class rates.
Right. And but I do know that the business partnership and the chamber full throat supported it. And it was the trade-off in 2001 for buying out the school property tax. And so I'm wondering, I was fortunate enough to have voted against that bill because I think it devastated our economics and our state funding for things. But it did happen. The majority of legislators supported it. The governor supported it. Business community supported it. And if we now change the agreement, would the business partnership and the chamber have a way of replacing the revenue, the 10% reduction in revenue that was tied to education, or would you think we should reduce education spending?
Senator, if anyone wants to address that question, that's a complicated question, Senator Pogue-Miller, and I'm not sure they were prepared for it.
Well,
but Mr.
Madam Chair, with all due respect, I don't think it's very complicated at all. That was the agreement to buy down school property taxes, and one of the pieces was to institute the statewide business property tax. Many of us thought that was an unwise thing to do, but the business community thought it was a good idea, some of the business community. So I don't think that's a complicated question.
Well, Senator Pogue-Miller, we are taking testimony on Senate File 1 and Senate File 27, which is the proposal about where we're going, not necessarily what went into the decisions made previously. And I just want to
Mr. Chair,
make sure,
Madam Chair, I will withdraw my question, even though the question is directly related to the proposal. But I will withdraw it. If it doesn't fit in your framework of a legitimate question, then I can withdraw it.
Senator Pogue-Miller, Mr. Hesse saying he'll address the question later on. So I think that's a good result here. Senator Pogue-Miller? Thank you. I wanted to point out the interplay between these two provisions, Senator Michelle, and I think it's very important. Mr. Misha testified that we have these high vacancy rates across the state, and we've had them for quite some time. It's not getting any better quickly. And it seems to me that if we can lower that corporate income tax, then those prospective tenants who want to begin a business have a better chance of actually making profits and entering into a business that is profitable. Most people are disincentivized to start a business if they can't see their way clear to making some money in doing so. And so I think there's an important interplay between the two provisions, and I appreciate that portion of the bill, Senator Michelle. Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to thank Senator Chamberlain for his analogy there, because one airline took a great opportunity when other airlines did that to turn a whole ad campaign into bags fly free, and they really turned that into a competitive advantage. And then you have other airlines that are turning it into an advantage back to try and get people to take their credit card and use their financial arm to, if you have their credit card, that your first bag flies free. So I just love that analogy. I just wanted to mention that our state is kind of facing a similar situation, that other states, which in fact are competitors for businesses, are making changes, and we need to think about that.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Howell. Senator Michelle.
Maybe in the form of a closing, or depending on how you want to go.
Senator Michelle, if I could first just ask if there are folks here that haven't yet identified themselves as someone who would like to speak in favor or against Senate File 1 or Senate File 27, I would encourage them to join us and speak on the issue. If not, then Senator...
Does that include members of the committee, Madam Chair?
Senator Pogue-Miller?
I'd still like my question answered.
Senator Pogue-Miller, I've invited folks to answer your question as best they can. Senator, or Mr. Hesse, would you like to address that question now?
Madam Chair and Senator Pogue-Miller, I'm happy to answer the question today and now. We did support the statewide property tax as part of the 2001 reforms. That was clear, and it was a trade-off we were somewhat uncomfortable with. The level of the tax had kept growing as the debate on the legislation unfolded that year, but we did support the end result. I don't think you need to turn around and reduce education funding, though, if you make a reduction in the statewide property tax at this time. I think if the legislature prioritizes its spending, they will find K-12 education to be at the top of the list, and they should be able to fit K-12 spending into the amount of revenue that's available for for state government. If it also decides that it should that a priority should be reducing the statewide property tax, I expect the legislature could also fit in a small reduction in the statewide property tax into that mix.
Thank you. Senator Michelle, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. I guess I was going to end this way, Madam Chair. This is you are all members of the 87th legislature. And every legislature before us has ended up with a balanced budget. That's our constitutional duty. Sometimes it's gone into summer or special sessions, but every legislature before has balanced a budget. That's important. That's what we'll be focusing on. But I think we all are realizing that we need to do more than that. And my argument today is we need to not just talk about balancing a budget, but about growing the economy. And you may not believe that these kind of tax incentives or tax relief or tax cuts will grow the economy, and we can have that policy debate. But if not that, I would challenge all of us to keep working to find other bipartisan ideas about how to grow the economy. We should be able to do this with Governor Dayton. We should be able to do this together. And if we don't, Madam Chair, we will be back again and again and again looking at red ink and deficits and wishing that the business sections of our newspaper were talking about jobs coming to Minnesota instead of jobs leaving Minnesota. But I hope that can be a big part of what this committee is up to in the next 2 months, Madam Chair, and I thank you for devoting so much time to this today.
Thank you, Senator Michelle. Without further objection, the chair leads over Senate File 1 and Senate File 27 for possible inclusion. We'll next hear from Senator Chamberlain on Senate File 117, phasing out the corporate income tax, accelerating the adoption of the single sales factor for corporate income taxes. And members, before we move on to Senate File 467, after that we're going to take up the local sales tax bills heard yesterday. We did notice the hearing today through 11 a.m., so we've still got significant business here, so I hope members will continue to hang in here with us until 11. Senator Chamberlain, is this your first bill?
No, Madam Chair. I was up here with a TIF last week. That was my first bill.
Oh. That's good. So you've already been acclimated. Nobody needs to take umbrage with you or give you a hard time because this is your first bill, because it's not.
We'll give it a shot. Well, this isn't quite as exciting as eliminating the corporate income tax and other things like that. But nonetheless, like Senator Michelle has said, this is a jobs bill. It's not as big and as exciting as some of the other ones, but it is a jobs bill. Senate File 117 simply takes the 2005 legislation adopting the single sales factor apportionment and accelerates it from 2014 to beginning 2012. So that is it in a nutshell. The benefit of this, obviously, is there's a bit, the assumption is that for Minnesota-based companies with property and payroll and they have national sales, then their income tax burden will decrease. So that is the hope. Investment, jobs, better for Minnesota companies, maybe attracting other businesses here to place assets in the state, thereby lowering their income tax burden. That is it.
Senator Chamberlain, do you have anyone to testify on
behalf
of your bill?
I did. This is Larson over here. I think you'll recognize her.
Yes. Welcome to the committee. Could you identify yourself?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Again, Jill Larson with the Minnesota Business Partnership. I will be brief. We do support Senate File 117. For many of you, this is a very familiar issue. Minnesota at one point was a kind of a leader in terms of states that more heavily weighted the sales factor. The way it works now is that your corporate tax is apportioned based on the amount of sales you have in Minnesota, the amount of property, and the amount of payroll. So It's sort of a perverse way that you're almost penalized if you add jobs or expand facilities in Minnesota. So Minnesota has been moving toward 100% sales apportionment. This has been done on a bipartisan basis. Senator Bach has supported it. Senator Pogemiller, I think, was an author of it several years ago. In 2005, we passed a law that phases us into 100% sales. Senator Chamberlain's proposal basically moved that up a couple of years. We support that. Again, it encourages Minnesota companies to expand their facilities here, to add jobs here, and they won't be penalized for it. Other states, again, in terms of competitiveness, have been moving faster on this. I think there's 15 other states that are already at 100%, including almost all of the states that directly surround us. Wisconsin, for example, uses it in their economic development materials. So we strongly support the bill and encourage your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Mr. Hesse, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Just want to echo the support of Ms. Larson's. We see this bill as another strategy to make Minnesota more competitive with its corporate income tax. And it's not just a Fortune 500 company bill. This will benefit smaller companies as well that are organized as C corporations. So again, we just wanted to be on the record in support of this legislation. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
All right. Questions? Yes, Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair, I just want to comment that we heard about this a little bit last week when Dave Murphy, the president of the Red Wing Shoe Company, testified in front of the Jobs and Economic Growth Committee. And I became aware of this formula, this taxation formula, a couple years ago when Red Wing Shoe and the economy was even in a little worse shape, and we were they were laying off their second shift, and they were potentially closing a plant in another state, and they were looking at where they're going to reallocate those jobs. And this played a significant factor in their decision-making process. And he testified last week that they were able to bring back a second shift in Red Wing, but they did move 130 jobs or added 130 jobs in another state at a significant lower cost factor because of this particular formula that we have in our state. And they make the same shoes in Red Wing. So those 130 jobs could have come to Minnesota. And he testified and he mentioned this specific formula that we have in our statute. So I would support this measure to accelerate the removal of this.
Thank you. Any other questions of the testifiers? Yes, Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's not really a question, and I think I'll provide this for the committee. I've seen it before, and I have it here today. There's an annual study that's done that compares Minnesota's business tax burden to our other states as a percentage of gross state product. So it's the total. It's a measurement of the total state and local taxes that businesses pay, and then how relative to our economy, and how do we compare to other states? And I think that's what matters. I mean, people talk about Wisconsin and North Dakota and South Dakota. How come we can't be like North Dakota or South Dakota? But I think what's interesting about it, and Mr. Chairman, I'll make sure the committee has this. This is for 2009. Minnesota is 4.3%. So that would be kind of the net effective tax rate of total business taxation in the state and local. The national average is 4.7. Now, if you look at our neighboring states, North Dakota is 8.2. I mean, their business taxation is terrible in North Dakota when you put it all in aggregate. South Dakota's 4.9, higher than the national average. Wisconsin's 4.6, higher than Minnesota, but slightly under the national average. I mean, those are just the facts. And we look at all of these little pieces, whether it's single sales, and I support the current law, and if there was a way we could accelerate the phase-out, I'd support that, and if we could find a way to pay for it. But it's very difficult to look at all of these little taxes, be it the statewide property tax or single sales or the corporate tax rate, in a vacuum. You really need to look at the whole state's tax climate in aggregate and then compare us to other states. And the truth is, we're below the national average. That's why Minnesota's business community has been very successful. And that's a good thing. I support us being below the national average and want to continue to make sure we stay there because tax policy matters. But I just think, Madam Chair, it's not – there's a problem when we just look at little pieces and say, oh, gee, we're an outlier on this little piece, because really it's the overall business taxation climate that matters. And I just wanted to get that out, and I'll be happy to make sure this gets distributed to the committee.
Senator Bach, could you just tell me what source that you're quoting?
This is Mr. Chairman, there's an annual study done by the Council on State Taxation, and the narrative says it's a premier state tax organization. The study is done by Ernst & Young. Now, Ernst & Young is one of the largest professional service firms in the world. I don't think anybody ever questions data from Ernst & Young. This is very good information. I'll make sure that the committee has it. But I just need to think, especially to people that are new on the committee, you need to remember that there is a whole menu of things that all figure into what our aggregate tax model looks like. And it's very easy to look at one piece and see that we're an outlier. But there are always more things going on than what you see with one specific bill.
Madam Chair?
Yeah. Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, may I respond? Mr. Chairman, excuse me.
Ms. Larson, you have the floor.
I think Mr. Hesse would probably have a comment on this as well, but the study that Senator Bach refers to is the cost study. In that study, they make mention of the fact that ranking doesn't really address the competitiveness issue, and it is business taxes as a percent of overall private economic activity, or GDP, and included in that equation is the cost of labor. And so because Minnesota has a high cost of labor, and that is factored into the equation, it makes it appear as if our business taxes as in terms of a ratio to GDP looks average. And it's sort of ironic that because we have a high labor costs that it makes that metric look a little different. I'll point out that California in that study is about ranked average as well in terms of business taxes, and I don't think anybody would say that California is a low-tax state to do business in. And I think Mr. Hesse might want to add to that.
Mr. Hesse.
And Mr. Chair, thank you. I think you also, if we look at other rankings, other sources, Minnesota Taxpayers Association rankings on the corporate income tax, the state, the business property taxes, you'll see that Minnesota is close to the top 10, if not in the top 10, in corporate income tax per capita per thousand of income. It kind of hovers, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, somewhere in that range. In business property taxes, Ms. Rocco already talked about the burden on Minnesota companies there. Which is, again, close to the top 10 nationally. Personal income taxes, the business flow-through, Minnesota's personal income tax is certainly in the top 10 nationally. The only major tax area where we're below or sort of mid-pack is the sales tax. Businesses pay about 45% of Minnesota's sales tax, and I think we're probably somewhere in the 26-30 range for sales tax per capita per thousand of income, somewhere in that range. So that's another way to look at things, and it's I agree with the comments of Ms. Larson as well, that the authors of the study did recognize that you can't use that one particular indicator as the sole method of judging a state's competitiveness.
All right.
Thank you.
Chair.
Sir, Paul Miller.
Mr. Chairman, as you know, I was the first author of the bill we're talking about. This is a bill that I actually am going to ask a question about now.
Sure. Go ahead.
Hopefully I'll have better luck with you, Mr. Chairman. The last time you were, and as Senator Bach just pointed out, this costs money if we accelerate it. And I support, as Senator Bach does and others, if we could afford to do this, it'd probably be a good thing to do. So my question is related to that, can we afford it? And last time I had the opportunity to ask both your organizations, have you reflected on this issue of what the total expenditure level should be for the state, and do you stand by your comments that it should be at that level that you testified to that day?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Larson. Senator Pogemiller, and I did reference that you were a supporter of the bill and an author. I think you were out of the room when I made those comments. So we do appreciate your past support on this provision. I think this bill costs about $18 million, and we would hope that within the course of the discussion of putting together the budget that there would be room for that.
At the $32 billion figure or at the $34 billion? What figure are, when I asked what level of spending would the two largest business organizations of the state support?
Ms. Larson.
I forget if it was a 32 or 34, but let me be generous. Let's say you're willing to say the 34. You said 32, but I think you meant 34.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogue-Miller, I think our comments, my comments at least, were that the preference would be to put the budget together within the available revenues. And so if that's the
That's the 33
plus the carryover or whatever the number is, it would be within the existing revenues that the state is bringing in through economic growth as opposed to raising taxes. So
is that the chamber's position also?
Mr. Hesse.
Madam Chair and Senator Pogue-Miller, yes, that's correct.
Thank you very much. Was that?
Thank you. Other Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I guess I would rephrase the question another way. With the competitive nature and all the changes that are being made in the other states, can we afford not to do it? And to Senator Bach's point, you know, I agree. I think we should look at the overall system, the overall effective rate, and see where we can streamline it and make it better. But I don't think just because that may be the right approach to go that we don't attack pieces that are just counterproductive to creating more business in our state. This is just a simply bad tax policy right here. This assumes that businesses do not have choices and that businesses will not leave our state. And they have choices. And anything we can do to give them a reason not to leave, this is counterproductive to asking a business to expand and add more employees. So I think we do need to accelerate this. And you're looking at a cost here that is a static cost. And we had some discussions about dynamic scoring. This does not take into account that removing this, that somebody might say, there may be people, and we heard testimony last week, they're waiting for this to expire. They're waiting for this to expire to invest in our state and to invest in their businesses. So I think this may cause people who are waiting to make a move. And you're looking at a number here assuming no change in behavior, and I think that number could be lower if you have businesses that do expand and invest in our state. So just wanted to make that comment.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Pogue-Miller.
Madam Chair, are you aware that are the business organizations aware that at the $33 billion figure, that is actually about $1 billion less than we spent under the Plenty last budget? Are you aware that that just factually is mathematically the case?
Senator Pogue-Miller, I'm going to ask again. They can answer the question if they'd like, but we are trying to talk about Senate File 117 and Senator Chamberlain's proposal on the adoption of single sales factor.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pogue-Miller.
With all due respect, it gets to this point of can we afford these things? That's all I'm trying to get at.
Madam Chair and Senator Pogue-Miller.
Mr. Hesse.
As we've described the budget picture to our members, we've certainly talked about the federal dollars that the state received in this current biennium that we're not going to receive or not likely to receive in the next biennium, and also the impact of the education shift. So we have talked about those factors and how it impacts the budget.
So, Madam Chair, if I could just nail this down. So the business community supports $1 billion less expenditure than we spent under the last governor.
Madam Chair, Senator Pogue-Miller.
Senator Chamberlain.
With all due respect, we are discussing whether or not this is an effective way to attract investment. And there is, although I agree with Senator Howe, we don't do dynamic scoring. We're all, a lot of you have been here for a while. We live in the state. We do business. We don't live in a vacuum. There is a dynamic aspect to this. I agree with Senator Howe again. We cannot afford not to do it. Wisconsin is one of those states that has got the single sales factor. Iowa, 14, 15 other states have it, and there's, many of them are surrounding us. We cannot afford not to do it. We cannot afford to continue what we're doing.
Senator Chamberlain, I would just add that we have a negative tax treatment for businesses headquartered here who are successfully competing across the globe, and that's a problem for our tax structure. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think one of the things that we need to think about when we think about Minnesota and competitiveness is that businesses have to have customers. And we have customers here in Minnesota, and I listened to Senator Box talk about the percentage of taxes that businesses pay, and we're below average. Then Ms. Larson commented that that wasn't a valuable number because it included the fact that Minnesota has higher incomes than other states, and that was factored into it. But it seems to me that for business, you'd want customers with higher incomes because they're going to have more ability to be customers to those businesses. And I can't get my head around why that is a negative in your perspective. I just can't get there.
Madam Chair,
Ms. Larson,
I don't think I said that the study was not valuable. I think I was trying to point out that the study itself says that it is not a measure of the competitiveness of the state's business tax climate. I think, yes, we would agree that having people that can spend money to buy our members' services and products is a good thing. I was just pointing out that because we are a state that has higher labor costs, relatively speaking, it factors into the study, and it does add to the cost of doing business.
And so, Madam Chair, Ms. Larson, it is a more involved discussion than just looking at these little pieces that are floating around here where we might be outliers, and you have to include the corporate rate and the income of the Minnesotans that are customers.
Larson.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, I would agree.
Thank you.
Without further objection, Senator Senjum, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm just going to be general and maybe – you know, come down on the side of Senator Howe here and others that said, you know, can we afford not to do it? And it's just anecdotal, but as minority leader over the past 4 years, I suspect I was in the offices of maybe a couple of 100 of our business leaders across Minnesota. And it's like they like the workforce, although they have some growing concerns, but they like the workforce. They love Minnesota. They, generally speaking, started in Minnesota. They want to stay in Minnesota. But the sad commentary that follows is almost painful to hear, and that is that we aren't going to and we can't afford to, nor will we, expand in Minnesota. And you hear that time after time after time, almost without exception. And it just, I think, calls us to understand and realize that we've got to take some measures here to fix that. And I think that's what we're about today in terms of talking about Senator Michelle's bill, this bill, and other bills. So hopefully, you know, as we move through this session and moving forward, we can, I think, come to understand this and do what we can, perhaps on a measured basis. But we have to make some progress in this area. We just absolutely have to. It's important. It's vital. If we're going to have a future, it's essential.
Thank you, Senator Senjum. Without further objection, the chair lays over Senate File 117 for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pogamiller.
Could I just ask, do you really think it's the asking whether the revenue breaks that are being suggested in the committee in relationship to the expenditure levels is out of the purview of the discussion here? Because I find that unusual.
Senator Pogamiller, we have business before the committee and we have an agenda. And the agenda was to hear these bills and these proposals. I'll give some leeway to do that, of course, but we do have business to do. In fact, we have 7 sales tax bills, local sales tax bills, that we are expected to take up. I know that there are numerous amendments to those bills, and I want to make sure we give those amendments full hearing. And so we also have to conduct business. We can have these overall discussions, and we have had many overall discussions. But it doesn't necessarily need to be in the context of this particular bill on the single sales factor.
Madam Chair, with due respect, you cut me off when the business community was in front of the committee previously. And I just think as a member I should be able to ask those questions, that's all. And I think the amount of time I've used up in your committee has not been very much.
I appreciate your comment, Senator. Moving on, Senator, just quickly before we move on,
to Senator Pogemiller's point, I mean, I did the math on the tax cut bills that we have in front of us today. In FY12, the first year of the biennium, if we were to enact all them, it's $295.7 million. Madam Chair, in all reality, where's that money going to come from? I mean, you know, the money all gets spent upstairs in the spending committees, and this committee has to bring in the revenue to balance the books. And what do? We hear spending bills. $295 million worth today. Like, do we not have an obligation to balance the budget? It is this committee that's going to balance the budget. They're going to do what they can do upstairs, and this one's going to have to be the closer, Madam Chair. And let's just quit kidding ourselves and leading people to believe that somehow in this budget environment we can cut people's taxes. And we're not the federal government. We can't run a deficit. I mean, that's just let's just get a little dose of reality of where the state's current budget situation is. I know it feels good to be able to tell people you can reduce their taxes. I'd love to be able to tell everybody that. I'd like my own reduced, as long as we're reducing taxes. I get that. But it's just not feasible right now.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bach, I think in testimony earlier today, we began to realize that corporations are following the business climate of other states. We just had the Hutchinson Company go to Wisconsin. We see it all over. We heard testimony earlier today. If they're going to find a better place to nest their corporations, that means that they're taking their jobs with them. If we turn Minnesota into a little more favorable place to do business, since we've seen corporations go to these other states, I think we will attract businesses. And the difference in the dollar amount that you're quoting might just improve the jobs, but also the income tax revenue of the state that those jobs would represent. It may even be better due to the volume of jobs that would be created by making Minnesota a good place to do business. Now, personally, in light of our budget constraints that we have now, I think it points us in a direction that we better make Minnesota a premier business state. Otherwise, we're going to continue seeing corporations leave Minnesota. And as a result, we're just going to be a cold flyover state. And you don't want that. I don't want that. But we've got to change the paradigm here, because the old paradigm is not bringing in the income to run this state.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bach.
I know there are members of the legislature that think where we've been doesn't matter. Okay? And Madam Chair, I even heard you say it, that we're not looking back, we're looking forward. But you know, Madam Chair, looking back matters. And I just think back to Governor Perpich in the early 80s, and Senator Limmer, you remember this, the governor wars between Minnesota and South Dakota. And I believe it was Governor Janklow. Remember, Governor, there was billboards and huge advertising campaign going on, and there was a huge battle between Minnesota and South Dakota. Now, maybe we should do a little research where we are today versus where we are in 1983 when those governor's wars took place. And let's see who's been successful. Now, South Dakota doesn't have a corporate income tax rate. They don't have an individual income tax rate. Those governors duked it out publicly all over the freeways with billboards and on the airwaves. Maybe we ought to, this committee, I have a little research done on what was the result of that. Because we're starting to hear that now. I've heard Senator Michelle say it relative to Governor Walker in Washington, or in Wisconsin. Maybe where we've been matters. And what has been the relative growth of South Dakota versus Minnesota over the last 30 years since those governors had a very, very visible campaign and competition for business. And Madam Chair, I think I'll have someone do a little work on that, and I'll bring the committee a little research, and maybe South Dakota is beating us in spades. I don't know, but I'll be surprised if that's what the real data shows. But, Madam Chair, I think I've heard over and over that kind of where we've been doesn't matter. I think it matters. I think it matters if we're going to chart a course for the future. Where we've been and analyzing where we've done things right and where we've done things wrong matters.
Senator Bach, I will welcome that. I do appreciate where we've been in the past. I do think it's important. I'm a big fan of the state's history. I'd love to learn more about that. But when we take up these bills, the idea is to look at current, where are we at now, and how do we move forward and how best do we move forward. So, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do think we ought to look at where we've been in the past and understand why we are in the situation that we're at right now. Because frankly, Senator Bach, it's not just South Dakota. This is a global market. But I tell you what, it really eats on me when we can't even compete with Iowa. I'm sorry. I mean, Iowa is kicking us around the block a time or two. And all they're doing is sitting back waiting for us to figure out what we're going to do. And then they trump us every single time. And they don't even have to do it legislatively. So that's why Hormel moved 700 jobs to Dubuque, Iowa, because they're tired of the games up here. They're tired of this rhetoric about what the CEO of Hormel is making and that we're going to nail him publicly for his decisions and his risks that he's taken with this company. That is really troubling. And so IBM moving to Iowa, Dubuque, Iowa. Why do you think they did that? That's what we really need to look at, is why these companies are looking at other states, what we have done in the past to help them make this conscientious choice to not choose Minnesota when they are going to expand. They're going to stay here, but they're not going to expand here. And that is a direct fact because I've lived it every single day of my life, well, married life.
Madam Chair, to that, to the Iowa comment, maybe Senator Rosen could tell me what the corporate tax rate in Iowa is.
Senator Bob, you just handed that out, Senator Rosen.
Highest in the country, Madam Chair, 12 point what?
It is flexible, Madam Chair, too. It is flexible, and when you consider the environmental permitting processes and the job creations and tax credits, you've got a very strong argument in Iowa and all these other states.
But, Madam Chair, the point is their statutory published corporate tax rate, perceptions matter, is the highest in the country, 12.5%. So,
Senator Rosen.
And Madam Chair, Governor Branstad is going to knock it down to 6%. It's even going to get worse.
Okay, Senator Howe and then Senator Marty.
Well, two things. One is actually the public rate is a sliding scale. It starts at 6%, which is about 38% lower than our starting rate. So, and I could say our starting rate because we have a fixed rate. But so it does matter how you present it. But in your research, Senator Bach, I hope that we could maybe look at economic development or whatever data you use that's within maybe an hour's drive time of the border, so maybe 60 miles on either side of the border, and see what that data looks like, because that's realistically probably the people that are either going to do business on one side of the state or the other side of the state. And it'd be interesting to see what that data looks like, because I would be on the other side saying, I bet South Dakota's kicking our butt when it comes to a 60-mile radius of the actual border and where we could drive. So, you know, we can shave and do all the statistics we want, but we just need to look at the overall business climate of where we're at. And I think
Absolutely. That's
kind of a better depiction, because we throw a lot of facts around, but I don't think you can discount what Senator Sinchem says when he's talking to the business people, and I don't think we can discount what the people in my, you know, as a former mayor, what the business owners there stated, you know, just like what the president of the Red Wing Shoe Company. We do need to change the way we're doing business, and I think it's a healthy discussion we're having, but we just need to move it forward and put some of the partisan positioning or posturing aside and really look at what's the best for the long-term future of our state. You know, these short-term things aren't going to help. What we're talking about today is some long-term things, long-term investments.
Senator Marty.
Chair, since everyone else is getting into this too, I want to point one of the historical things related to what Senator Bach was saying is even before Mr. Hesse's group was called the Chamber of Commerce, it was the Association of Commerce and Industry, I think, MACI it was called. They put out a chart in, I think it was about 1980, talking about all these jobs had fled Minnesota in the previous 2 years to Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota, Wisconsin. It was like, I don't know whether it was 30,000. It was a huge number of jobs had fled the state those years. And I kept thinking, they kept saying, we're not changing anything here, and they're all fleeing the state. And I thought, you know, after 30 years of this, where are all the businesses? How come we still have any businesses here if this is the case? So I think it's important to recognize, yes, there may be some businesses that do choose to move there, and some choose to start here, some grow here, some move here, a whole range of things. But the bottom line is, Mackey had, remember, it was like 30,000 jobs had left in the previous 2 years. Some group had gone out and decided to follow up. I remember IBM had moved to, I don't know if it was Newton, Iowa or something, 600 jobs, and they called down there because they couldn't find it in the phone book. And they said, oh, yeah, IBM was looking at doing that, but they never did it. So it all depends how you count the things. But just so we know, this is not a new discussion this year or this decade. This has been going back before there was a Chamber of Commerce in Minnesota. So I'm sure it'll be going on 10 years from now. We'll be still talking about all the businesses leaving. And if we're doing well, like we have all the Fortune 500 companies, and we have good employers and good employees and a good state to be in, let's just not get too carried away with these statistics about how everybody's fleeing the state, because they already left 30 years ago. I know they did, because that's what the Chamber of Commerce and Industry was saying.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
And to that point, Senator Marty, I think, again, back to my first comment is a long time ago, is let's really focus in on our strengths in the state and really look at the industries that are here and the momentum that we have in place and help them out. If we can't help out everybody, let's focus on, like we did with the angel tax credit last year, on the and the biotechnology, the high tech. Those are really good emerging job creation markets that we have, that we own in Minnesota.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. I'd like to move back to item number one on the agenda at this point. We had Senate Files. Well, we could be here all day, but we need to get down in time for session. Senate File 276, Senate File 312, Senate File 363, 423, 632, and 644. Senator Senjum, do you have an amendment on your bill, or are you prepared to go? I just learned that this was not included in our packet from yesterday, and that's why it's being handed out. Forgive me. One more correction. It's not in today's packet. It's now being handed out, so everybody has the bill. So we're going to take up each of these bills. Senator Newman is here, and I understand that there is an amendment on his bill, so we're going to skip that. Senator Hoffman will be here shortly, so we're going to move to Senate File 312. Are there amendments
here yesterday,
that
yeah.
folks would like to offer with respect to the Marshall sales tax proposal from yesterday? If not, then the Senate, chair would ask that Senate File 312 be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor? Oh, Senator Bach.
But just, Madam Chair, not on the bill. This, we had this bill in the, I believe, in the tax bill last year that passed the Senate. I did everything I could to help Senator Fredrickson at the time be successful in the conference committee, and we weren't able to do that. But just let me offer just a little bit of counsel to the city of Marshall. I believe their intent is to run a referendum, a vote on the lodging tax. That's not required under law for them to do that, and I just would caution them about doing that. There's no reason to have to do that. The legislature is not asking you to do that. You know, if somehow it fails, your project's not going to work. There really is no reason to do that. The legislature is not asking you to. That's just my counsel. And I don't want to go down the road of asking other cities as a legislature to run referendums on a lodging tax either. So just my 2 cents for the city of Marshall.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, one more bit of wisdom for City of Marshall. In their handout yesterday, they showed what the price would go up for the half-cent sales tax, and some of their calculations were, they said you'd have a 30-cent increase on a $15 meal, and that was actually a 2%. They used their math wrong, and I was just going to counsel them when they do their promotion of their thing, they might actually use the 0.5 instead of the 2.0 percent sales tax, because their numbers were making their case worse than it is.
Good counsel for the City of Marshall. Without objection, the chair would lay over Senate File 312 for possible inclusion. Mm-hmm. All those in favor? I guess without objection, we don't need a vote. All right, Senate File 276, Senator Newman is here. Did you have something else you'd like to add to the record on this, Senator Newman, or do you have an amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Scott Newman. I'm the senator from Hutchinson. Madam Chair, no, I don't have anything additional to add at this point. It's my understanding the motion is going to be to lay the matter over for possible inclusion, and there may be some amendments at a later date. I don't know. The only thing I would add is that with the news of HDI's closing in Hutchinson a couple of days ago, it adds more urgency to this issue for us because HDI was one of the primary users of the water treatment plant that was erected, and in large measure because HDI was there. Now we are losing another several hundred employees, and so I just wanted to be here to let you know that it does add some degree of urgency that this matter in fact be included in the overall omnibus bill. That's all I have at this time, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. With Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, provisions for this local option sales tax were in last year's Senate bill also, and we tried to accommodate Senator Dill with this. Members, I got to tell you, no city, no mayor has worked harder to get a local option sales tax for their city than Mayor Cook has. And he has a real serious problem with his wastewater treatment plant. Went so far as to conduct a referendum before he came here this year just to show that the community really wants this. But, Madam Chair, I do think the precedent always has been once these authorizations are given that a referendum be held, and I do. I don't have an amendment, but, Madam Chair, as you mark up the bill, I would just suggest that we ask the city to hold another referendum. I think allowing cities to conduct a referendum before they come here implies some entitlement, and I think it's going to create a precedence going forward that if we allow Hutchinson to hold a referendum, then come here and get what they want, other cities are going to head down that same road. And I think it's going to make a very difficult precedence for the future tax committee to deal with. So if the cities, and so please discuss that with the mayor. I think that's certainly it's going to pass. And then the other question I have, Senator, and that's just, Madam Chair, just a thought for I think you to think about. You're going to do what you want to do. I'm not going to try to offer an amendment. But to Senator Newman, when this wastewater treatment plant was constructed, I'm curious as to how much of the funding came from the state through the Public Facilities Authority. And, you know, there's a formula there that determines how much state participation there's going to be. I'm just wondering if allowing another revenue stream that you didn't have, I mean, previously when the application was made to PFA, they took a look at what your potential rates were going to be, and that impacts how much state funding goes in. Does the passage of this bill kind of break faith with the agreement that was made between the city and the Public Facilities Authority when the project was originally constructed?
Madam Chair.
Senator Newman.
Senator Bach, I'm unable to answer that question. I simply don't know the answer. I don't know. And the Mayor Cook, who is here with me in the office, in the audience, has indicated he doesn't know the answer either. But I will try to get an answer to you.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Newman, I think that's rather important. You know, the state, we have this formula. We have a lot of people on the list over at the Public Facilities Authority, and all kinds of assumptions are being made relative to how much public financing should go into a project. And one of those is the consideration of rates. So I just think to be consistent so that we don't have other cities coming forward after they've received state money. And I realize Hutchinson is really an outlier because of some things that have happened in their community. But I just think we need to be clear going forward that, you know, a deal was made assuming certain rates. There was a certain amount of state participation in the project because of all of those calculations. And it would be, I think, helpful, Madam Chair, if the committee knew kind of what the original assumptions were when the state put financing into the project and to what extent the state participated.
Mr. Mayor.
Madam Chairman, Senator Bach, Mayor Steve Cook with the City of Hutchinson. We can get that information for you, and I understand your question, and I think it's a fair question. That being said, you asked about the rates, and we obviously had rate increases built in to finance these projects, and that was part of the discussion with the PFA people. However, even from the reductions we saw in the jobs and usage in 2009, we were able to go back to the state and restructure the loans that we had with them because they recognized the issues that we have. And so now, you know, we're even past that situation, and that's why these added revenues are needed. But we'll certainly get you some of those numbers, and should we submit that to yourself or the chairperson? Yep. Okay.
Madam Chair. Mr. Mayor, Senator Skoy.
Thank you. To this point, Mayor Cook, you know, my recollection of when I worked with the community on this, I think that the local effort is a percentage of your per capita income. Okay. And not a dollar rate. So I think they should be okay on this, Senator Bach, but that's what I would verify.
Okay.
Thank you. And Mr. Mayor and Senator Newman, you know, Senator Bach has made his recommendations, too, about the referendum, but I would just remind you that there were folks here yesterday that were concerned about the communities that were here before a referendum took place,
yeah.
That it might seem that the legislature was giving its imprimatur to the proposal, and it might be marketed out in the community. And so I think you'll have to weigh that appropriately with your own voters and decide how best to approach that. But it's not an easy one. It's one that you're going to have to finesse a little bit, I think, in the community. Mr. Mayor.
Madam Chair, we were really upfront, too, when we talked about this. We sent to every household and property in the city an information packet that included a cover letter about the proposal with the sales tax, an information sheet that laid out the issues and what we've already done, and then also a double-sided question and answer sheet. And right up on the front of that, we did mention that, you know, even if the voters approve this, we still have to go to the state to get their approval. So it doesn't mean that, you know, just because the vote is done that the sales tax is going to be enacted. One concern I have about going back is I believe in statute we're required to hold a referendum during a general election. So now we'd have to wait two more years, and we don't have time to wait, frankly. So our hope is that this gets approved this year, and we can initiate it hopefully the last quarter of 2011 or first quarter of 2012. So.
Thank you. Without further, Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, one more question. Yesterday during, I don't know if it was written stuff or testimony, Mayor, but I thought I heard the rates were only going up by like 5% if you didn't have this. I don't know.
Yeah, that's, I'm really, Madam Chair, Senator Marty.
Mr. Mayor.
I'm glad you asked that. I thought afterwards that I didn't answer that very well. That 5% was a 5% annual increase just basically to cash flow the operations. The sales tax provides that same revenue plus additional revenue to build up our reserves to a little higher amount, more acceptable. Right now we're basically at the minimum from that bond covenant standpoint. 1 year in reserves of our debt payment. So we really need more than that, and also some additional revenues to help pay for, you know, replacement of equipment and things like that. So if this doesn't happen, what we talked about, if we had to raise $1 million some other way, it would be $180 for a residential property per year. Which is about 2.5 times what the sales tax would cost a family of four. And now with the latest changes, we're looking at a loss of at least another $500,000 in revenues. So instead of that 180, now it would be about $270 a year that a residential property owner would have to pay to help cover this.
Madam Chair, that's helpful. 5% struck me as being $20 or $30 or so. And I know one of my cities that got some flood mitigation stuff, their water treatment plant in order, they actually quadrupled their rates before they got the state match. And I wondered, because 5% sounded trivial, but yeah, $270, I understand why it's.
Yeah. Okay. And that would be in addition to the other fees.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you. You've made an incredibly good case for your city, and you do your city very proud. You're very well served by both of your efforts here today. Without further...
Madam Chair,
Senator
Bach. Let me just suggest, certainly the mayor and the city have made a very strong argument. I wouldn't have put this in last year's tax bill if I didn't think they should get it. But I do think it... I'm just thinking about my cities. Once they find out that the city of Hutchinson got a local option sales tax to pay for their wastewater treatment facility... Many of us are going to get letters from cities requesting the same authority. So I think, because we're going down a new road here, I think, Madam Chair, it would be helpful if you could work with the mayor to identify some unique circumstances that the city of Hutchinson has found themselves in, particularly relative to the job losses and the flow that's lost at Hutchinson Technology, one of the major contributors to the revenue that would have made the facility work. If we could find some very extenuating circumstances that the city of Hutchinson is under, and I believe that can be done, just so that we don't open the floodgates and next year see a whole flurry of bills at the request of cities who now want to use a local option sales tax that would allow them to export some of the burden of paying for their wastewater treatment facility to people that might be visitors to their community. So. And I know the mayor can identify them because I'm familiar enough with the project. I think it would help all of us next year if we could figure that out.
Thank you, Senator Bach. Looks like Senator Newman's willing to take on that task. He looks like he's ready to go.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bach, between the mayor and I, we will get that criteria put together, and we will provide it to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Without further objection, the chair lays over Senate File 276 for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Senator Hoffman is here, and we'd like to take up Senate File 53. Do you have any amendments or final comments, Senator Hoffman?
I do have the A1 amendment, Madam Chair. Basically, it's going to clarify that this referendum was approved by the voters on November 2nd general election 2010.
Thank you. We'll have that amendment handed out right now, and maybe we can come back to that. In the meantime, we'll take up Senate File 363, which was Senator Koch's Clearwater bill. Any final comments or questions from the committee before Senator Bach?
Well, Madam Chair, I Senator Koch's bill, is that what we're on?
Correct.
Senator Koch's bill for Clearwater, I actually passed into law, and it was one of them that I was able to get the House to agree on. I'm not looking at the language, but I looked at it yesterday, and I don't know if there is precedence for additional uses outside of what the taxpayers originally voted for. Because the taxpayers vote for a local option sales tax based on the authorization of certain uses that they're going to get. I think it's a little bit unusual for a city to come back here and say, well, you know, the sales tax is generating more money than we thought, and now we want to do all these other things with it when we don't know how the residents of the community might feel about that. Now, I suspect that if we asked Clearwater to go to a vote, it's going to pass because most of that tax burden is exported to people who stop along Highway 94. But just a thought to consider, Madam Chair, and full disclosure, there is a small precedence in the city of Hermantown in my district where they were allowed to add a use for one use for, I think they had authority for their fire hall, and we extended it to allow them to add on administrative offices, more of a technical addition, and a vote was not required. So, but that's the only case I can ever think of where we had allowed additional uses beyond what people voted on. So I just would suggest that a vote in Clearwater is probably a good idea. I think it'll pass. I don't think it'll damage the bill any.
Well, Senator Bach, I remember something from that conversation yesterday, which was that it was in the referendum, but they didn't have a plan linked to the referendum.
And since then, they've adopted the plan that links the proposal for bikes and trails in the referendum to a plan, which was what Representative Lencheski said was her major objection at that time and why they changed the language of the bill. So I think maybe we have different information. We hear certain things, but that's what I heard, and I would hope this committee would fully support Senator Koch's proposal here.
Madam Chair, and I'm sorry, I was late getting here yesterday, so I didn't get to hear the testimony on Senator Koch's bill. But just looking at the language, I think it's kind of a new precedent for us.
Well, and Senator Bach, from what I heard from House Research and from Representative Lencheski and Senator Koch's testifiers, it was in the referendum. They took out that language because it wasn't part of a Parks and Trails plan, that they since passed the plan, which now matches the referendum results, and they want to make sure that those dollars can be used as the voters initially intended. And so, Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I think that it was an issue. It was there. It was just the House Tax Committee Chair said she wasn't comfortable because at the time they hadn't come to us with enough of what the details were. But in other words, it was miscommunication between them and the legislature, not between them and the voters. So I think your point's well taken, but I think in this case it was not a problem. It's not an expansion.
Thank you. Without further objection, Chair Lee's over Senate File 363 for possible inclusion. Senator Hoffman, back to Senate File 53, and the A1 amendment has been passed out. And Senator Hoffman offers the A1 amendment as an author's amendment to her bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Senate File 53. Any further comments or questions, Senator Hoffman?
No, I have none. I just encourage everyone to vote for it and pass it through or whatever.
Thank you. Without further objection, Chair Lee's over Senate File 53 for possible inclusion.
I just want to register the same objection that cities hold votes and then come here. And this is a good project. I've met with the city about it. I understand it. But oftentimes bills get introduced here with a whole menu of uses. And I just remember Senator Perry's bill last year for Owatonna. They had a whole laundry list of uses. And if the voters had voted on that in advance, I think there is this entitlement that the legislature is now going to allow them to use the local sales tax for all those purposes. So I just want to add that word of caution, maybe more to cities than to members of the legislature. But we're going to, if we allow cities to hold referendums in advance, and this one might be an exception because there's a very well-defined project and this legislature is not going to change it. But, Madam Chair, going forward, you're going to find local option sales tax bills here that you are going to want to amend the uses. And Senator Perry's was a perfect example. It was way too broad. And I just think that legislator from that community who authors the bill based on a referendum, then when they can't deliver what the people voted on because this committee decides that that's not good policy, we're going to create some real heartburn for legislators back home when the referendum acts as an entitlement.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to Senator Bach's point, I want to assure Senator Bach that this has been well vetted in the city of Fergus Falls, and I would maintain that that making them come to us at all causes us a lot of heartburn. These folks at home did all the work. They did all the research. They put together the project. They raised the funds. They talked to their communities. They got it on the ballot, and they voted for it. And now we sit kind of lording over the city of Fergus Falls. My mayors, my city councils, my voters are smart people. They know what they were voting for. So I just appreciate the concern, but I have full confidence in my city council and my mayor.
So in favor of the Fergonians,
voters.
The chair would like to lay over Senate File 53 for possible inclusion without objection.
As amended.
As amended. Thank you, Senator Bach. As amended. Senate File 423 is Senator Miller's proposal for Lanesboro local option sales tax. Any comments or amendments or folks here to perhaps testify? Seeing none, without objection, the chair lays over Senate File 423 for possible inclusion. Senator Senjum, 632, any final comments or amendments at this time?
Madam Chair, yes, I do have an A1 amendment, which I'd like to offer, and I think this is worthy of some discussion. And Madam Chair, the A1 amendment, if you'll refer to the sheet with my name on it, has to do, and the A1 amendment has to do with the possibility of deleting this provision from this particular sales tax bill, and maybe sales tax bills going forward, although that's not the case with this amendment. But the operative language, as I understand it, is if you have a sales tax and you're going to bond for some of those projects and pay that money back with a sales tax, that in 1995 or thereabouts, the Minnesota legislature required that, and going forward, that and frankly, this, if you look at the statutes, it is in capital letters. By voting yes on this ballot question, you are voting for a property tax increase. And the only way I could envision that almost in any city, and Rochester included, would be that if the commercial sector of Rochester just deteriorated to the point where they couldn't pay the bonds, it would fall back to the property tax, I suppose. But I kind of think that's generally unlikely, and unlikely to the point of really requiring that this kind of language be on the ballot question. Now, maybe there's some history here that I'm not aware of, but I just wanted to have this discussion.
Senator Sundrum, I appreciate this. You brought this to my attention yesterday, and I think it's a really good point and one that we might want to consider doing on all the sales tax proposals going forward. So prospectively, you wouldn't want to do it based on a ballot question that maybe had been passed before, but
right.
I think that it's confusing at best the way it's laid out here, because if folks are being asked to vote for a sales tax, this seems to indicate a property tax increase, and
yeah.
I think it's confusing for voters. I would agree with you that this makes some sense. Now, are you offering this amendment at this time to Senate File 632?
Madam Chair, I am, yes.
All right.
For purpose, well, for the reasons I've stated, if it really doesn't make sense, then I'd like it not to be on. You know, I'd like it not to be on the Rochester amendment. But maybe going forward, too, it just deserves more discussion. And if we need more discussion, Madam Chair, we can certainly set this aside and have that on more of a global way. But. And I would honor that if that's what, direction you want to take.
Let me just point out for members that you handed out the language that you've questioned, and we handed out the A2 amendment, but it's the A1 that matches the language you brought to the committee's attention. So if you'll just give us a moment, bear with us, Senator
yep.
Sundrum, why don't we come back to your Senate file while we hand that out. And in the meantime, I'd like to just take up Senate File 644, Senator Lori's bill. Any questions or comments from folks about Senator Lori's proposal for the city of Cloquet? If not, then the chair would lay over Senate File 644 for possible inclusion. All right, Senator Sundrum, Senate File 632, we now have the A1 amendment, which would make the change that you've proposed to delete the language regarding the property tax increase, correct?
Yes.
Council, would you just take a moment to walk us through how this language works in Senate File 632?
Sure. This language is just inserted, and it eliminates the requirement of the statement on the referendum that it'll increase property taxes. And this is, again, this is not needed, and it's not relevant anymore because the payment on these bonds will come from the sales tax revenues as opposed to property tax.
So Senator Sundrum would offer the A1 amendment to Senate File 632. Questions or comments about the amendment? Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, the Tax Committee spent a lot of time on this as it relates to school operating levy referendums. And there's not many words here, but a lot of work went into these words as it relates to operating levies for schools. The Education Committee probably wasn't real happy with the language we came up with, but I agree in the case of Senator Sundrum's issue where it's a local sales tax, that's probably not necessary. But I think we ought to be, in order to be honest with voters about voter-approved levies for schools, this language needs to be on the ballot. So just want to express that, although there aren't many words here, there was a lot of time spent on this between the Education Committee and the Tax Committee in previous sessions.
Madam Chair,
Senator
and Senator Bach, This is simply to amend or to this amendment's operative to Senate File 632, but and so I'm not intending that we just dissolve this whole thing at this point. And Senate Counsel, we aren't, are we?
I'm sorry, Senator.
We're not really dissolving this whole amendment by referencing it to at least my bill, right?
That's correct.
Thank you, Ms. Pollack. All right, then Senator Senja moves the A1 amendment. Any further questions or comments? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The A1 is adopted.
Madam Chair.
Senator Marty.
On that issue, when they are asking for a sales tax increase, what is the ballot question? Does it say we are increasing the sales tax, I presume?
Ms. Pollack.
That's a good question.
Generally, the ballot measure, Madam Chair, Senator, the ballot measure would call for the sales tax increase for the specific capital improvements plus associated bonding costs, and that the sales tax would increase until such point that the capital improvement costs are raised plus associated bonding costs.
So Madam Chair, the question would read something like, the city, this is a question that to raise the sales tax, they would have that word in there to finance and then describe the project. So there, in other words, to be comparable to the language we excluded, because it's not voting for a property tax increase, it does have very explicit words here. And the reason for needing that on the property tax ones is because it's not really clear to a voter that a levy increase might mean property tax increase, I gather.
Ms. Pollack?
That's correct.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Limmer.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Bach's reference to honesty has been satisfied. Is that not correct?
Senator Limmer, I think it's a principle we all can agree with.
That's good.
All right. We have adopted the A1 amendment, and with that further clarification, now I'd like to move to the A2 amendment. Senator Senja, would you like to offer that amendment at this time?
Madam Chair, I would. Well, would I? I don't have it.
You know, Senator Senja,
I think you're coaching me, so I will do that.
The A2 has been passed out, Senator Senja, so it's before us, and I just want to remark that we all just agreed to the principle of honesty. So,
oh, okay.
Thank you all for clarifying,
Mr.
that.
Mr. Chair, actually, this came from Senator Limmer, and we've checked with our city staff, and I'm not sure if we've gotten to bond council yet, but everybody seems to think this is fine. So happy to proceed.
Thank you, Senator Senjum. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, a question about the wording of the amendment, though. The way I read it is the taxes expire when the city council determines $160 million has been received from the taxes to finance the project plus an additional amount. Is that meaning the 160, could that be interpreted that they can raise 160 to finance the projects plus something beyond that? I assume it's the intention is that the 160 is both the cost of the project and the amount sufficient to retire the principal interest and premium.
Madam Chair, I'm going to say yes to that, but if I'm incorrect, our city administrator is here, and he would come forward, but he... And maybe it's not necessary, I don't know, but...
Senator Marty, I think your reading is correct, that we're saying plus an amount sufficient to prepay or retire at maturity the principal interest and a premium due on any bonds issued for the projects under Subdivision 4. So I think it's pretty specific. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I just wonder why you need that second thing at all, that second change at all, because if $160 million has been received from the taxes to finance the projects and to prepay or retire it, in other words, it seems to me that second half is more confusing than if you didn't change the second half, the second line of the amendment.
Madam, it may be a recommendation to bond council, but Senator maybe Senator Newman or Representative or Mr. Newman can help us.
Thank you, sir. If you could just state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, I'm Gary Newman. I'm the Assistant City Administrator. The language is needed, and I think it works the way it is. There's $160 million in principal, and if you issue bonds, you're paying issuance costs and interest costs. So that's why the language is the way it is.
So, Madam Chair, in other words, my question, the language you want is correct, but in others they need $160 million plus. In others they may need $190 million or something.
Yeah, I don't have the amount for that because it's going to change with the interest rate, but that's I believe the language works the way it is. And as suggested by Senator Limmer, but we're having it reviewed by bond counsel, but I think it works fine the way he has it now.
Thank you. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, then isn't this whole amendment less accurate or whatever term for the voters? In other words, it looks to me when I read this with the amendment in there that it expires when they've raised $160 million, when it's actually expiring when it's $190 million, whatever the total cost is. Why is the sufficient funds not a better language than this?
Mr. Newman?
Madam Chair, I think probably the concern was that the City Council may say there's some other sufficient funds, but this the sufficient funds language has been used before, but we can understand why somebody would want to put in the $160 million in principal language to just say what that principal amount is. And the ballot question will be very clear that it's $160 million X amount for principal or interest and issuance costs. It'll explain that.
Madam Chair, it seems to be that this is fine with the city, and Senator Limmer brought it forward to me, so if it's fine with him, why?
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
The $160 million was to define for the public to understand better what they're getting into in this particular proposal. And although it may be referenced in statute, it may not be referenced to the public. And that was just used to clarify the dollar amount, the principal dollar amount.
Thank you. Senator Limmer. So Senator Senjum moves the A2 amendment. Further comments? All those in favor of this A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And so the Chair would like to lay over Senate File 632 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Without further objection. Thank you. Members, we have one additional bill on the agenda. It's my bill, the local sales tax bill, Senate File 467. I intend to ask the committee to lay that bill on the table so we can work with that document going forward with some amendments, but I'd like to make sure you're all aware of this bill. What it does, it relates very much to the things that we've been doing over the last couple of days. And if I could just take a minute to explain the bill. It would create the statutory authority for cities in the state of Minnesota under certain conditions and circumstances to approve their own local option sales taxes without further need to come to the legislature for additional approval. And the idea is I'm hopeful that the committee will reach some consensus about what those parameters might be, that we always hold the authority outside the scope of the parameters, and they would still need to come to the legislature for permission if any of the conditions or circumstances are not met, the provisions in the bill. So generally speaking, the authority would be granted to cities for proposals that have passed a referendum in a general election. The tax could be no more than 0.5% cumulative, so no more could be on the books at any one time. There would be a limitation as to the period of time within which any bonds must be issued and paid back by the tax. There is a time within which the tax must expire, and there are certain permitted uses for the revenues, including convention or civic centers, public libraries, parks, trails, and rec centers, overpasses, railroads, bridges, flood control, water quality projects, court facilities, fire law enforcement, and public safety facilities or municipal buildings. The idea here is that if we could feel confident under the circumstances that they were presented, any city should be able to go forward and do this without further legislative permission. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I very much like the idea of this bill, but I have some just a general concern, and maybe it would be if we removed it from the metro area kind of thing might make a difference, but I'm still not sure. Let me give you an example where they have concerns about this, and I'll use my local cities because the one I live in happens to have more per capita retail than any other city in the state. We outdo Bloomington significantly. If they decided that they wanted to do capital improvement, one of those things you list is things they could use it for, and they were to put a half-cent sales tax in, everybody around us would be paying in for something that might, that some of those communities they have very little retail in, might be needing their own one of the same type of facility, and they're paying for ours and their own. So I just worry in the metro area particularly, and I can picture some cases in Stearns County or some other areas where you might have several nearby cities that are, one wants to charge everybody around them for it, and especially when there's a disparity between retail in different cities. So I guess that's a concern I'd have. Overall, I like the idea that they don't have to come here and we go through each one of these every time if there's some general things that we think make sense. But I do think, at least in the metro area, I see there being some inequity problems.
Senator Murray, I agree with you, and I think that might make a very important amendment to this proposal. Again, I'm not going to ask the committee to act on it today, and it's something I'd like to continue to work on with committee improvements and amendments to be considered by all of us. I'm hoping to build consensus around this principle. Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I would just speak in support of this. I think this is the direction we should go, and I think there also maybe should be added an understanding that this may, if a city desires to go down this road, that it may affect any other aid dollars that they may get, whether it's local government aid or if we come up with a new essential services aid or something of that sort, that this may impact that.
Senator Howe, I'm working on an amendment to this bill that would do something like that, but again, I'll be looking for input from committee members, so that's why I've brought the bill out so folks could see it and maybe give some thought to how do we shape these principles so that we could maybe all agree that there are certain parameters within which cities should be given this permission. I am going to ask that the committee lay this bill on the table, Senate File 467. I would move that it be laid on the table at this time for that purpose. Senator Pogemiller, although it's not debatable, I do want to hear what you have to say.
I'll wait.
No, Senator Pogemiller,
I was going to give advice on your bill.
That's why I brought it out, and I didn't know you were seeking to be recognized before I moved to lay it on the table. So I withdraw my motion. Senator Pogemiller.
Well, Madam Chair, I think your bill will lead to an explosion of local sales taxes, which I think would be the wrong thing to do for the future of the state.
Thank you, Senator Pogemiller. We'll continue to have the conversation. The chair would move to lay Senate File 467 on the table. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Senate File 467 is laying on the table.
Okay.
Members, on Tuesday we'll hear an overview of the PILT system, payment in lieu of taxes. There may be some room for reform there. And on Wednesday and Thursday we have a number of bills that we'll hear. We'll take Senate File 467 up hopefully another day next week. Without further business before the committee is adjourned.